Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what up, everybody? It's Lean Keys Real Talk back with another episode. Thursday night, just about to roll right into the weekend. That'll be a great weekend. I hope everybody has been having a blessed week, a blessed day, another day above ground. Life is beautiful. It's great. It's gorgeous. There's so many things to be thankful for. And I know I'm thankful. And, you know, I'm still working on it every day. But, you know, life is a work in progress. And finding that progression in our own lives is a work in progress. So I'm just working at that every day. And I just try to remind myself I'm blessed to be alive, and all of us are blessed. If you're listening to the show right now, you're also blessed. Lee, you out there, bro?
Yeah, I'm right here, man. What's up with it?
What up, baby? How you doing tonight?
I'm up, man. I'm just chilling.
Yeah, you know we had to get on for this one because I don't really know. I forget what day it was last week that we went on, but for some reason I feel like it's been a while. Maybe we got on. I think it was we got on earlier last week. We almost missed the
cutoff.
Yeah,
last Wednesday at 6 o'clock. Last Wednesday, 8 your time, 6 my time.
That's right. You on point. All right. So, I thought I had the good memory. Damn. All right. So, anyways, I didn't get to watch this video that you sent me, but I'm about to actually watch it right now, and I don't know if you want to tell the people what it was, because I know Israel Adesanya was on Ariel Helwani's show, and he was talking about John Jones. I haven't got to watch the clip yet, so maybe you can intro the people what they talked about in that interview, because I haven't seen it yet. I'm about to watch it right now, though.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, basically, last week they had the seasonal UFC press conference. You know, everybody was up there except the people that was fighting that night. And I guess John last month, John, actually I'm writing an article on this. I don't want to spill too much of the beans because I'm going to cover it all in my article. But last month, John Jones said fighting Israel Adesanya is probably going to happen somewhere down the line, you know. And then Israel came out and said something to the fact that he had already killed one goat and he's going goat hunting or whatever. And then John didn't like that. And he said some stuff that would be in the article. And then, John said something about Israel's fight. He commented on his fight. And then that's when Israel went on the Ariel Helwani show and he called John Jones a bully or whatever. And I'm sitting here like, dog, how's John Jones bullying you? You're a fighter. He's a fighter. You said this comment towards him. I don't get the bullying thing. And bullying is just a term right now that's being overused. And I think a lot of people use it, and they really don't understand the context in which they're using it. Because when we say bullying, it has a negative connotation to it. And these guys are fighters. So how can another fighter bully you? And basically, you call that guy out or, you know, whatever. And he did say some very, very derogatory things about John Jones. And when my article come out, you know, I covered all that. And hopefully my article will be out by tomorrow or Saturday. I wrote the article today. Basically, the premise of the article is the Adesanya John Jones beef and what would happen if they were to fight. So, you know, I gave my opinion on if they were to fight, you know, what would happen. Actually, I gave two scenarios. If they was to fight at a catch weight and if they were to fight at 205. So, but you know, man, this trash talk has definitely been a topic of conversation here lately. Sometimes trash talk can cross the line when you start talking about families, you know, religion, kids, and stuff like that. You know, that should never happen. I think trash talk can be done in an effective way where you can trash talk your opponent and try to do what my man Keith say, apply mental warfare to your opponent. Sometimes your opponent can be done before he even step in the octagon if you try, if your trash talk is effective. And right now, you know, I don't really think there's beef between Adesanya and Jones, but I think it's good banter because they're both good fighters. Right now, you know, John is the undisputed light heavyweight champion, and Adesanya is the interim middleweight champion. And it's just two champions talking trash to each other. And we'll see what happens if they were to meet up. And the only way I see them fighting each other down the road is if both of them are still champions. Because one is a champ and the other one isn't, it's not an appealing fight. So we'll just have to see what happens down the road. If they were to fight, I don't see it happening until late 2020 or early 2021. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I didn't actually get to watch the video because it's hard for me. I was trying to listen to what you were saying, but I read the quote, and I guess he said John Jones literally reminds me of what I've hated most in life: bullies. Yeah.
But see, the thing is he used the word bullies. But the context in which he's using it, John isn't bullying him. John wasn't bullying him. All of a sudden, John actually paid him respect. And when he first said it, he was like, I think me and him fighting down the road is something that will happen. How is that bullying? You the one that came out and said, you kill one goat, so I guess I'll be hunting the other goat here shortly. How's that bullying? He just replied to what you're saying. So I just think the word bullying shouldn't have been used by Adesanya. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think if it was, I think if he hadn't said anything, if Adesanya hadn't said anything yet, especially something like that, where it's like you're kind of, I mean, it's not like a literal threat, but like you're kind of threatening the guy in terms of competition. And you're putting yourself out there, you know, as saying that you're eyeing a fight with him. So, I mean, him to call him a bully after that, after you already kind of went on the offensive about the whole idea of it, and then kind of like Adesanya was basically like throwing rocks and then hiding, you know, throwing stones and then hiding his hand. So by saying a bully, saying, you know, he's a bully after art, he already was basically talking trash. So if he hadn't said anything, I could see where he was getting at. But since he already was talking trash and then called someone a bully just because they responded to him, because they actually responded to him, then he does look a little weak. But in the overall about it, though, I see what he's trying to do by saying that, and I can't see what he's saying. I can definitely understand why he would say that about John Jones. Out of many guys he could have said that about, I could see why he would choose to say that about John Jones. He definitely has a bully mentality to him. I mean, especially the way he's treated Cormier for a long time. I could definitely see where he comes up with that word. Just in this situation, it kind of doesn't make sense because he was already talking trash. So to then call somebody a bully because they responded to you for talking trash about them, kind of like makes you know, people question you. So I get how it looks strange, but I get what he's trying to do, though. Definitely, I understand. You know, actually, but aside from that, though, actually, I read another thing today that I didn't see like if it was like a legitimate source, but I did see something saying that Bobby Knuckles might want to move up to 205 to fight John Jones. And
Yeah, I read that too.
Okay, so that's out there. I thought there was.
Yeah, I think he actually said it to Ariel Helwani also. I think he was on the Ariel Helwani show too, and he said it on the Ariel Helwani show or one of those MMA shows. He was like, that he might think about moving up to 205 to fight John Jones or whatever. But my thing is with Robert Whittaker, man, we just need you to get in there and defend your belt one time. That's all we ask as fans. You haven't defended your belt not one time. You were supposed to defend it against Yoel Romero. Yoel came in. He was overweight, so basically he couldn't fight for the belt. Then you were slated to fight Kevin Gastelum, and you got emergency appendectomy, I think. Something happened where he had to have emergency surgery to dare to fight. So that's where we stand at now with Adesanya as the intro champ, is because Bobby can't stay healthy. So go ahead.
But the thing is, though, about that is that, you know, I'm a fan of Whittaker, but the problem is, if you really think about it, like, he never really won the title. I mean, he's the champion, but, like, when did he ever beat the champion? Like, the last person to defeat the champion was GSP. So you could argue that GSP is more the middleweight champion than Whittaker is, because Whittaker never beat a champion. He's only fought for a vacant belt, if you really think about it, because GSP basically vacated the title. So I guess the interim champion, I don't even know if he was interim champion, but I thought they just fought for the number one contender, and then they just gave the belt to Whittaker because GSP wouldn't defend versus him. But he never really beat the champion, though. That's my problem. So I don't know. It's hard for me to the middleweight division. You know, he had two fights with Romero. You know, both of them kind of reminded me of, like, number one contender and interim title fights. You know, he never beat any champion. He was supposed to fight GSP. GSP didn't want to fight. Then he was supposed to fight Rockhold. Then he fell out. Then Rockhold got knocked out, so he didn't end up defending versus Rockhold. He ended up fighting Romero again, the guy he already beat. You know, and he still, I don't know. I don't understand. His title reign is kind of tough because he never beat the champion. So, you know,
it's kind of a weird situation. Because this is a situation we never really had before.
What?
It's a situation we never had before in the UFC, where a guy is crowned a champion, but he never beat the champion because the champion relinquished the belt. And then, okay, he goes to defend the belt, but never gets a chance to defend the belt to be recognized as a real champion. I guess Khabib would be in the same boat if he didn't fight Conor, because basically he did defend the belt against Conor. But let's just say if he didn't defend the belt against Conor, would we really recognize him as a champ because he won an interim belt against Iaquinta because Tony got hurt? So I'm with you on this. Bobby needs to have a true championship fight for us to look at him as the champ. So I guess when he fights Adesanya, the winner of that fight can actually be recognized as the true middleweight champ.
And one thing was, was the Gastelum and Adesanya fight, was that his seventh fight in the middleweight division, Adesanya, or was that his sixth fight? Of course, he's on a beat.
I want to say it's his sixth fight because he only been fighting in one weight class since he joined the UFC.
Okay, so I want to say, it was either his sixth and if not his sixth, it was definitely not his fifth. I think that the fifth was probably Silva. So the sixth fight, that was probably the sixth fight. So he's had 6-0. So Okay. I just wanted to know because a lot of guys come in and get three wins and then they get a title fight. But that's in also more shallow divisions where there's really not as much competition. That's one thing I do like about this with Adesanya, what they're doing is that they actually made him fight a good amount of fights before they like put him into this position. He's got a good handful of wins. I mean, I know he hasn't, a lot of people will say he hasn't fought guys, like, you know, he hasn't fought the best guys at middleweight, but I don't think that's really his fault though. I mean, I think if those fights were offered, I mean, I don't know what happens, like with his management and if there's fights that were on the table that he turned down, maybe, but I wouldn't know all that. But, like, he really, it just so happens the way things panned out. Like, he, certain guys were available at certain times. Like, everybody say he didn't fight Yoel Romero, but Yoel Romero is, like, around sometimes, and then he's not around. Like, he was, I'm pretty sure Yoel Romero was just doing a reality show for, like, the past couple months, and then he was supposed to fight at this upcoming card, UFC Sunrise, next weekend, but then he fell off of that card. I forget why. But then, so now Jacare is fighting Jack Hermanson instead in the main event. And, but it's just like guys like that, like people want to say, like, aren't, like guys like that aren't always available. So they make it sound like he didn't fight this guy, he didn't fight this guy. Well, I believe he fought who he had the opportunity to fight. Like, I don't think this guy is scared of people. Do I believe that he could lose?
Yeah, I'm over two on that.
I'm not saying that
if
Adesanya fought the whole top 10 in middleweight, that he definitely goes 10-0. I'm not saying that. I mean, I think if he fought the whole top 10 at middleweight, you know, not counting the champion, I would argue that he at least goes, I'd say, 7-0, at least 7-0, I would say. If he fought the whole top 10, you know, 10-1, he at least goes 7-0 before he starts having some problems. I mean, I know that there are guys that he would have problems with. I'm not saying each one would be like an easy victory, like an easy win. You know, he'd have problems with guys coming up, but I think he could very well go 7-0 if he fought in the whole top 10. And then he'd probably start having issues. We just saw him have some issues with Calvin Gastelum. So Calvin Gastelum is right there. I'm pretty sure he's the number 3 guy right now. So he's right there. He'd have that problem again if they rematch. I think he'd have a problem with him again. And Jacare, I think, is right there. I think he's number 2. So he'd have problems with Jacare because Jacare's got an incredible ground game. Adesanya has great takedown defense. But, like, if Jacare does put him on his back, then we don't know how he's going to respond to that because he's not used to being in that situation. And even if it didn't go there and he doesn't go to the ground, then Jacare still, I think, would give him problems on the feet. I'm not saying he can't beat Jacare. I think he can, but I do think that it would be a really good fight, a close fight. Same thing with the Romero fight. Romero would bring him the power that I don't think he's so used to seeing, and especially hasn't seen yet in the UFC. Romero is a dangerous guy. You know, no matter what he hits you with, he's a dangerous guy. You know, we've seen him take people out with those flying knees, and it's, they're lethal. So I think if he goes 7-0 and then probably like the last 3 fights, you know, the 1, 2, and 3, he'd have some problems. And, you know, they're not definite.
I mean, looking at his last 4 fights, he fought Brad Tavares, who was in the top 15. He fought Derek Brunson, who I think was in the top 10. And then he fought Anderson Silva, one of the all-time greats, coming back off of suspension. And then he fought Kevin Gastelum. So basically, you can say his last 4 fights, he has fought some tough guys, some quality guys. Now, his hay is going to be made when he fight Robert Whittaker. We know Whittaker has, you know, he's known for his punching power. But we also know that Whittaker can get down on the mat. So my thing would be, can somebody make him fight off his back? There's one thing we haven't seen yet. Can he survive a grappling match? Can he carry the weight of guys being on top of him for 3, 4, 5 rounds. You know what I'm saying? So, Adesanya came in. You know, he had a hype train behind him, and it was well deserved. And actually, he went through a war with Kevin Gastelum, and I mean, which is very impressive to me because I really didn't think he would take that much punishment. But he took it and he survived it, and he came out of round 5 and dominated round 5. So, you know, it was a well-deserved victory on his part against Kevin Gastelum. But like you say, if he ends up beating Whitaker, he still has to go through Yoel, Jacare, Weidman. Maybe Rockhold might go back down because he may feel like he could beat Adesanya. So it's a lot of guys down there. And then, you know, T. Wood keeps saying that, you know, he might go up. So we never know what will happen in the future. But I think once you get the belt, you can't dodge people. You can't, you know, you can pick and choose who you want to fight to a certain extent. But, huh?
Hey, you know that's not true.
Yeah.
You said
so,
once you get the belt, you can't dodge people. You know lately there's been some dodging going on. There's been quite a few guys dodging guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think right now in that division, though, you really can't dodge nobody because everybody in the top 5 to 7, they worthy of a championship fight. I mean, if Jacare wins, the UFC already told him he's getting a shot at the winner of the Whitaker Adesanya fight. Now,
yeah, because
when Yoel Romero comes back and he fights Paulo Costa, I think whoever wins that fight is going to be in line to fight the winner of the Jacare versus Whitaker Adesanya fight. So,
but I don't even really, you know, I don't even really know why though, because why? Hold on, why? I don't understand the hype about what Paulo Costa, because who is this guy fought? Like, I haven't seen him fight anybody at all. Like, I saw him fight the last 2 times I saw him fight. Maybe I haven't been paying attention. But the last 2 times I saw Paulo Costa fight, the last one, he fought Uriah Hall. And beating Uriah Hall in 2019 really does not do much for your stock, if you're asking me. And then the last time I saw him fight before that, he fought Johnny Hendricks. And that doesn't mean a damn thing. He's not even in the UFC anymore. So I need to go look up his record because I think Paulo Costa is way too hyped right now. People talking like this guy is just fighting nobodies and he's in the top five. Is he even – I mean, can you explain to me, like, the hype about this guy? Who has he fought? Has he fought anybody?
I mean, I'm kind of with you on this, but it goes back to something you just said. This division ain't that deep. So, basically, if it's not a deep division – if you beat a top 5 guy in this division, basically you can lay claim to a title fight because there aren't too many guys in this division. So, I mean, that's probably why the Paulo Costa hype is so big right now, is because of the lack of depth in that division. But I'm with you. To be honest, I don't even remember actually seeing him fight.
Yeah, man, this guy is ridiculous. I mean, I actually just looked up his record, and I'm actually right. The last 2 wins that he has is versus Uriah Hall and Johnny Hendricks. Man, come on, man. This guy, really? We're talking about this guy fighting for the title, and that's the 2 guys he just fought? I'm disgusted. I am disgusted.
Johnny Hendricks has been in the UFC for what, like 2 years, 2.5, 3 years?
Who?
Johnny Hendricks has been in the UFC for a while now.
Well, that's another thing. This guy barely even fights. I think those 2 fights are like over the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's I'm with you on that, man. It's like But the lack of depth in that division makes them basically a title contender because they don't have no fighters down there. But the one thing, like me and you always say, the cream gonna rise to the top. So, excuse me, our boy Adesanya, he's gonna have to really, if he does beat Bobby Whittaker, he can lay claim hype being real if he was to defend his belt at least three or four times.
Man, this dude is only 4-0 in the UFC. But I understand. There's not enough guys, so this is what happens. You end up having guys, and they end up fighting for a title. I understand, but it's just, who is he fought, though?
Exactly.
Oh,
you can't give me your wild ball of Johnny Hendricks.
I can't put no stock in that, bro. He's had two fights since November 2017. And at this point, he has almost not fought in a whole year. And this guy isn't even scheduled to fight. He keeps falling out. He was supposed to fight many times. What happened?
First, he was supposed to fight Yoel Romero, and then he pulled out due to injury. And then they rebooked the fight, and then Yoel pulled out of the fight. So now they're trying to reschedule it again now that Yoel Romero is done with his obligation with that reality TV show. So we'll see what happens, man. I mean, I want to see him against a top five guy. So I can get him a good evaluation. I can't evaluate you on beating Uriah Hall and Johnny Hendricks.
Johnny Hendricks.
Yeah,
I don't even think those two guys are ranked.
Yeah, Johnny Hendricks was on his way out of the UFC because he couldn't make weight. And then Uriah Hall, I don't know what happened with Uriah Hall, man. Uriah Hall had so much potential, man. And it was like, his potential, maybe we just overvalue him as a fighter. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes, we see guys come up and come through the ranks, and, they have good showings against guys that were supposed to. And then, we like, label them as the next best thing. And then all of a sudden it comes out to be that they really weren't that good. I mean, like Ovince St. Preux. I mean, I thought Ovince would be, a top light heavyweight, man. This guy, he win one, lose one, win one, lose two. It's like, man, come on, bro. So, I mean, maybe we just overvalued Uriah Hall based on the hype that the UFC put behind him. Maybe he was never that good.
I mean, yeah, it could be. I mean, I just look at. Yeah, I mean, when he was first coming out, he was supposed to be. He went on a little run when he first started, but I mean, he had losses on his record before he came to the UFC, and I mean, he lost Ultimate Fighter Finale. He lost his first ever, fight at a UFC event. Then he won a couple, and then he lose, and then he win a couple, then he lose a couple, and give him the credit, he did fight a lot of top guys. He's fought Robert Whittaker. He's fought Derek Brunson. He's fought Musashi back when Musashi was still in the UFC. He fought, a couple of these guys. And the thing is that, some of these guys, they once they start actually getting a step up in competition, you start finding out, that's when you get to see and you can really weed out who the best guys are in the division. And this guy, was able to beat certain guys, but then, come back and lose to certain guys. He actually, I didn't realize he fought Musashi twice, and he beat Musashi the first time, and then they had a rematch and Musashi beat him. So I didn't know that Uriah Hall fought Musasi, Gegard Mousasi twice. I wasn't aware of that. I thought they only fought once. But, I mean, he's fought Gastelum. He actually has a win over Thiago Santos, who's the light heavyweight title challenger right now. I mean, and he's not the only guy who has a win over Thiago Santos. So that's a lot of people's speculation about Thiago, is just that if this guy could lose to all these guys, how's he going to beat John Jones? So, I mean, that's a different story for another day. But, I mean, in terms of Paulo Costa's work, I mean, just looking at, you know, his statistics and just the numbers he's put up, it is impressive. I'm not saying that, you know, his work isn't impressive. I mean, this guy, 12-0 undefeated, 11 of those come by knockout in one submission. You know, this guy's never lost, and he's only finished fights. He's never gone to a judge's scorecard in his career. I thought he was going to go to a judge's scorecard when they had the Uriah Hall fight, because just based on the way it was going, it was like Uriah Hall had his back up against the fence, and, you know, Costa's putting pressure on him, just kind of wailing on him, throwing shots to the body, shots to the head. You know, Uriah Hall just being like a tough, gritty guy, digging deep how he does. I mean, he wasn't offensively, he really wasn't throwing any volume back at all. It was kind of really one-sided. Uriah Hall was kind of just getting swung on, you know, most of the fight, from what I remember. But, you know, he stayed in there for a while. I thought they were going to go to a decision, but it ended up being, I want to say it was late in the second round or maybe in the third round, they stopped the fight. Uriah Hall was taking a lot of punishment, but I thought that one was going to go to a decision. You know, Costa probably would have won a decision anyways, but that would have been one time where he wasn't able to finish a guy. And that's just the kind of thing that I think about a fighter like this is, you know, I think that's the reason why they want him to fight Romero so bad. They want to get the Costa and Romero fight, because if you just look at both of the way, like, these guys are very similar in the work that they put in. Like, just looking at their records, I'm pretty sure Romero has a very similar track record as Costa. So just looking at the two of them, they appear to be very similar, but the difference is Romero has been in title fights before. Romero's fought the best middleweights. Yeah, that's middleweight, right. So he's fought in the best middleweights in the world, and Paulo Costa has not. You know, he's fought in guys that were, you know, their careers are already done. I mean, Yoel Romero's 13-3. You know, he has 11 KOs. Costa has 11 KOs. You know, these guys together, that's 22 KOs. But, you know, Romero's gone to decision twice. But you want to know why? Because he fought Robert Whittaker twice. That's the reason. And I bet you Costa would lose to Whittaker twice too. So that's the difference of these two guys. Romero's a beast all the same. And it could go either way, but I'd put money on Romero to beat Costa right now. Fierro, whenever they had it.
The only chance I get Costa beating Romero is because Costa is heavy-handed, and Romero, even though he's a tough guy, he's susceptible to getting hit. And with Paulo Costa's power, I think he probably could clip Romero and probably get him up out of there due to his punching only. But I think Romero will come in with a game plan to wrestle him and take him down. And then with the wrestling, he can set up his strikes with fake takedowns with the overhand right like he did on Robert Whittaker in their last fight. Because he changed the tide in the Whittaker fight when he started fainting the takedowns. Whittaker would defend the takedown, and then Romero would start hitting him with the overhand right, a jab up the middle, a left hook, you know, stuff like that. But he was using it off the feint. And I think Paulo Costa, one thing about him, he's kind of short for this division, I want to say. If I remember him correctly, he's kind of short for this division. So in this division, you want to have size and you want to have reach. I don't think he has that, and I think that would definitely make him look vulnerable against the good fighters in this division. So, but I'm with you, man. He beat Paul. He beat Johnny Hendricks, and he beat Uriah Hall. That doesn't get
now,
my juices flowing.
Now in comparison, now this is where it really gets thick when you think about these two guys fighting. Now, compared to the competition who Yoel Romero has fought. Now, look at this. So Paulo Costa is 4-0 at middleweight in the UFC. He's only had 4 fights in the UFC. He's 4-0 at middleweight. Yoel Romero has been in the UFC a much longer time, and some would argue that he's a much older guy because he is 41 years old. But if you really have seen this guy, 41 does not matter in to this guy's body. You just look at Yoel Romero. Ain't nobody 41. This guy is the youngest 41-year-old, the most impressive physique for any 41-year-old that's probably alive today. This guy is a machine. I don't even know like how this is possible that he fights how he does and has the cardio he has. This guy don't even really gas out. Like I feel like he don't even get tired. He just keeps throwing. He's crazy. And the thing about it is he's 4-5. He's had 11 fights in middleweight. He's 9-2. So besides the two basically title fights with Whitaker, the champion, he's undefeated 9-0. So and look at the guys he's beat. He fought Derek Brunson and he finished him. He fought Tim Kennedy. Tim Kennedy used to be a straight stud back when he was in the UFC. He finished him. He also fought Brad Tavares. That was a decision. He fought Lyoto Machida back when he was here. Finished him. He fought Jacare. That was a close decision. He fought Chris Weidman, former champion. Finished him. Also, Machida, former champion. I forgot to mention that. We know that. Machida wasn't Machida the middleweight champion before?
Light heavyweight.
Oh, yeah, light heavyweight. But still, former champion, though. So, still counts. And Luke Rockhold. And he fought Luke Rockhold. He finished and he knocked him out in the third round. Another former champion. He's beaten. Yoel Romero has beaten 1, 2, 3. He's defeated 3 former champions. He's defeated 3 world champions. Three former world champions. How many world champions has Paulo Costa fought and defeated? Or even fought, period? I don't know. I don't think he's fought anybody who gives a damn about anybody. No one who gives a damn about has he fought. And 2 losses to Whitaker is really not saying much in the middleweight division. That's the best guy that there is right now to fight. So, and both of those fights, I really honestly don't remember the first fight that much. I don't even know if I even saw it. I really don't know if I don't think, yeah, I don't. I think I missed that fight, the Whitaker Romero one.
But you felt he won the second fight, though.
Yeah, but that's what I'm getting to. The first one, I don't think I saw that fight, honestly. But the second one, I thought Romero beat Whitaker in the second fight. And I think the one thing I was happy about was that they had to come to a split decision because I did think that it was worthy of that. You know, some fights nowadays in the UFC, I get very frustrated with the judging because when they have all 3 judges and it's like all 3 judges and they all score the contest 30-25, I'm like, are you serious? How did the fight 30-25? How did you have 3 10-8 rounds? Like, certain fights, I don't understand how these judges get these numbers. How would you even have a 10-8 round in that fight? Like, for example, I can't give you the exact breakdown off the top of my head of the rounds with the Romero-Whitaker too. It's been too long since I've watched the fight. But for example, you know, just going back to this past weekend, Dustin Poirier and Max Holloway. Didn't Dustin Poirier win by unanimous decision?
I want to say yes, but let me check.
Because I'm pretty sure it was a unanimous decision. And honestly, I really don't agree with that. I mean, I'm not saying, like, I just wanted to see.
Yep, unanimous decision.
Yeah. See, and I think they
49-46.
Okay, so you know, that's one that I just would have liked to see the judges' scorecards for. You know, per round.
Well, basically, they said he won four rounds, and Holloway won one.
Oh,
so basically, if you look at it, yeah, because basically 49 is because you get 10 for if you win a round. So basically, 10 times 4 is 40. And normally, if your opponent wins, it's normally 10-9. So basically, yeah, they said that Poirier won 4 rounds to 1.
Yeah, man, I really don't know if I agree with that because I feel like so does that mean that they had 10-8 rounds? I mean, besides round one, I don't think there was any 10-8 rounds. I thought every round was
They were all 10-9 rounds. They were all 10-9 rounds.
Okay. See, I can respect that more because I thought that besides maybe the first round, if they had to give a 10-8 round, I would say probably the round one because Poirier came out like a bat out of hell in the first round. That was crazy. He outstruck Holloway. I think it was like 60-something significant strikes to like 20. Like, it was something crazy like that. The strike differential was huge. Like, Poirier was – I thought – it looked like I really do believe Poirier was trying to finish Max Holloway in the first round. I really do believe it. Just based on the way he came out like a bat out of hell, I feel like he was trying to get a TKO finish or knock him out in the first round. He wanted to have a one-and-done. Quick one, but I think he just realized that this is Max Holloway. This guy doesn't go down like that. Like, you can't knock him out in the first. I mean, has that ever happened? Like, I don't think Holloway's ever been knocked out. And never mind that, knocking him out in the first round is just it's not as simple as you can make it sound with your words. It's really not. So,
but
that fight is just gonna. Yeah, go ahead.
But. To back up what you're saying, because all three judges scored it 4 rounds to 1. But when you take a deeper look at the numbers, Max had more total strikes. Max had more significant strikes. Poirier had 12 more strikes to the head than Holloway, 153-141. Max had more body shots, 39-18. Dustin Poirier has 7 leg kicks to Max's 1. Dustin had 1 takedown, but Poirier had 1 submission attempt. So if you really look at it, at the numbers wouldn't say it was 4 rounds to 1. But when I'm looking at the numbers, it tells me it should have been at least a 3-2. Poirier... maybe 3-2, maybe Holloway 3-2. Because Holloway, it ain't like Poirier dominated him. Because out of all the numbers, they all lean towards Max Holloway. So, but at the same time, when you're watching a fight, sometimes the numbers can lie. Because you can see your eyes telling you that this guy is beating this guy's ass. Whereas when you, because you know, like when you watch in a fight, you're like, man, boy, this guy's beating this guy like a drum. But when you finally get the numbers at the end of the fight, you was like, wow, I can't believe that this guy really did this. The losing guy really did this. So, you know, in a way, I was shocked Dustin won. But remember I told you I was leaning towards Dustin winning, but I just couldn't pick against Max because of his win streak. Max had been totally dominant in his 13-fight or 12-fight win streak, and that's why I went with him to win. But I think if they was to fight next weekend, I think Max would beat him up real bad. I don't think Dustin probably could do the same thing he did to him Saturday. But Dustin, he deserves it, man. You know he's been a guy.
Yeah, I like Poirier.
I mean, he's been a guy that fought everybody. He ain't ducked anybody. He basically hasn't begged for a title shot. You know, he has gotten the ring and done. He's gotten octagon and done everything he's supposed to done. to get in there and fight for the belt. Now, the thing is he going to be a paper champ? We already know September he's supposed to fight Khabib. Me personally, if Dustin can't fight off his back, he's going to get whitewashed against Khabib. Because Khabib will eat a shot to take you down. He's going to wrestle you to death. He's going to dry hump you man style for at least 5 rounds. Me and you both know this. We knew that going into the Conor fight. We knew that going into the Al Kessel fight. He's going to man hump you for at least 4 rounds. You're going to have to carry his weight. Can you get back to your feet? Poirier, I don't know, because Eddie Alvarez pretty much dominated him on the mat. So, is Eddie Alvarez a better wrestler than Khabib? I would say no. So, Poirier is going to have to, he's going to have to come with something new to his game in September for him not to be classified as a paper champ.
Well, I think, well, the thing is this, is I think it was hilarious you said, you know, Khabib's going to try to wrestle you for at least 5 rounds. At least 5 rounds, you know, at least 5 rounds. It could even be 6. Never know in the future if they have enough 6 rounds, Khabib going to wrestle you for 6 rounds. Oh, my God. They're going to have a tiebreaker round. They're going to be like, all right, like, in the future, you have 5 rounds. If it was a 10, if the judges couldn't decide, if it was a 10-9 round for 4 rounds, and then the 5th round they couldn't decide, they're going to go to a tiebreaker round and do 6 rounds, then Khabib's going to wrestle you for that 6th round, too. And you're going to have to watch a half hour of Khabib wrestling. A half hour of Khabib man helping the dude. That's going to be worse than the 25 minutes.
But, you know, one thing
but, you
about
know,
him
he,
that you
one
have
thing,
to...
Yeah, yeah, go ahead. Nah, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
All right, I was just going to say this one thing. Now, this is one thing that I think that Dustin might be able to do. Now, he did just get his black belt in jiu-jitsu a couple I think it was 2017 he got it. He just got his black belt. But he really hasn't shown us a lot of his groundwork. He hasn't shown us his game too much. He's been in a lot of striking exchanges. His last couple fights, he really mainly just been standing and banging with guys. That's mainly what you – that's at least like 75% of his fights have just been stand-and-bang fights. And, you know, one thing that I think that he might be able to pull off if he trains it enough and comes in with the right game plan and doesn't allow Khabib to just take him down and dominate him right out the gate in the first round, he might be able to pull off a submission on Khabib. That might be something that he could have in his arsenal. If he trains it, comes in with the right game plan, you never know. He might use Khabib's pressure against him and somehow lock him into a submission and tap Khabib out. Can you imagine that happening in the realm of possibility? I know it's a stretch versus a 27-0 guy, but you never know. Anything is possible in the UFC, in MMA, period.
Actually, you know what? That's not a bad idea. I mean, I'm looking at his fights. He does have a couple of submissions via armbar, Dars choke. Basically, armbar and Dars choke how he's won via submission. But like you said, basically all his fights as of late have either been decision or KO or TKO. So basically what that tells me is he's not really fighting on the mat anymore. He's more confident in his striking game than he is in his ground game. I think that if Dustin was to come out and take Khabib down, or at least put in a, I ain't gonna say half-hearted, but a viable takedown attempt in the first round, I think it would get Khabib something to think about. But I think Khabib is just so comfortable on the mat. But one thing we haven't seen is him fight off his back. We always see him on top of a guy. We never seen him be the one carrying the weight or the one scrambling to get back to his feet or the one that's scrambling to get, top control or side control from their back. So it would be something different, but Dustin doesn't strike me as the guy that would do that. I think he, right now, he's probably more confident in his striking game than he is in his ground game. But I do agree with you. It probably wouldn't hurt anything for you to take him down, or at least attempt to take him down.
Well, because what it got, because the thing is like, you know, 27 fights, like, guys got to start thinking about other ways to beat this dude. Like, you can't, like, we have seen, well, I mean, we really haven't seen, like, that much, but, I mean, like, guys can't, like, we've seen guys, like, we've seen Michael Johnson, like, stand in front of Khabib and have success on the feet, and he lands some shots on him, and you think that he's hurt, and maybe he is, but then he just takes you down and just dominates you on the mat for the rest of the fight. So we know that Dustin can outdo Khabib in the striking department, but he needs to go outside the box. Like, guys need to start thinking of how else, outside the box, how can we beat this guy without just doing what he expects us to do? Because Khabib has fought strikers, you know, and he knows that his striking is not that good as a lot of these guys. Like, I wouldn't think Khabib would have knocked out Michael Johnson. Khabib knew he was just going to wrestle Michael Johnson. He knew he was going to probably have to absorb a couple of Michael Johnson's best power shots early on, and then he was going to take him down and do what he does best.
Yep.
And that's what he does with most guys. And Iaquinta, you know, was landing some shots, and I don't think, you know, he respected Iaquinta's power, so he wanted to trade with him. But you did see Iaquinta have a lot of success. But then, you know, he would get Iaquinta down. Iaquinta would get back up. He'd get him back down. He kept bringing him back down. You know, that's what he's going to do. But guys need to, you know, that's another intriguing thing about Tony Ferguson is Tony Ferguson can fight very well off his back, and we've seen him do that in many occasions. And even when, Ferguson can get hurt, but Ferguson comes back, like, Ferguson, like the undead in the octagon. This guy, like, it's hard to really put him down. And that's one thing that's intriguing about, you know, the Tony and Khabib fight that I think a lot of people in the back of their mind, they think about that, is that Tony is a guy who will bring a different dynamic to the fight, and he won't just go in there and try to punch this guy's head off, you know, because you know that you can't just stand there and strike. Khabib's going to take you down and dominate you. Poirier can't just go in there and try to have a stand-and-bang fight because we know he's just going to get taken down and dominated for five rounds. So he needs to think of another way, you know, start getting back into practicing his jiu-jitsu, you know, put that black belt back to work, start drilling groundwork, you know, from now until September and work out a game plan. You can strike, you know, I'm not an expert, but, you know, mix your striking in with your jiu-jitsu, and you know, I believe he could work out a game plan and figure something out on the mat to try and, you know, work with Khabib's wrestling. You know he's going to take you down. Like, I would be amazed if Dustin finds a way to just not get taken down. Like, that would be the real domination if a guy just doesn't get taken down by Khabib. Oh, what happens if he can't take you down? Well, okay, then you found a way to win, but you will get taken down. So you've got to prepare to be taken down and work with his wrestling, try to figure out how you can work from the bottom to try and take him out while he's trying to take you out. Because Khabib doesn't even finish people. We've seen this. I know.
Yeah.
Then people say, because he finished Conor. Okay, but besides that, when is the last time that he finished somebody? I mean, we all know.
Michael Johnson.
He didn't finish Michael Johnson.
Yeah, he did. Kimura, submission.
Oh, was it? I thought that was a decision.
Nope. Michael Johnson, submission, Kimura. Other than that, all his fights, either he beat Tiago Tavares by KO, TKO. Then you got decision, KO, submission, decision, submission. So basically all his fights normally go to the judge's scorecard, because he's going to grapple you, take you down for five rounds. Three or five rounds, he's going to take you down to smother you. There's two things I want to say about this, about Khabib. First of all, I don't respect the 27-0. I give him 11-0 because 11 of his wins came in the UFC. I give him that. So I look at him as 11-0. And then the second thing is, he's a guy that whether you like it or you don't, and normally I don't like it, he's going to stick to his game plan, man. He's going to use his strength of wrestling and grappling regardless of what you do or what you got planned. If you're not ready to defend a takedown or have a means of getting back to your feet, he's just going to wear you out, man, with his constant pressure. Even though I feel that sometimes he'll take a guy down and he's not doing nothing, if I was refereeing his fights, if you take somebody down and you're not doing something after a minute, I'm standing you back up. I say 30 to 45 seconds. Well, no, they got 5 minute rounds. I say after a minute and you're not doing anything, I'm standing you back up. Because it's not appealing for the fan to watch. And basically, you just sitting there basically clock watching and you're just basically outscoring the guy because you took him down. So I think once he takes somebody down, he should be trying to improve his position, maybe doing some ground and pound, you know, maybe going for some submissions. But if he just land on somebody, to me, that's not a fight. That's not what the premise of MMA is. So I think it all depends on who's refereeing his fights also.
So, who would you want to see referee his fight with Poirier if they end up fighting in September?
The Australian guy, the tall guy that's really, you know, he get good instructions. You know, the one that he really don't just let them lay down on the mat. He just don't let you hold somebody against the fence. He breaks you up. I can't think of his name right now, but I would rather him referee the Dustin and Khabib fight. Because in a championship fight, we want action. As fans, we want action. We understand that some fights are more technical than others, like the John Jones, Anthony Smith fight. Like I predicted, that was going to be a technical fight on the behalf of John because he really didn't want to test Anthony's power. So he was going to negate that by closing the distance on Anthony, making sure Anthony couldn't explode. And I think that's what Dustin might, he's going to have to fight at range against Khabib. He's going to have to establish leg kicks. He's going to have to establish his jab. And he's got to hope to catch Khabib coming in to take him down, either with a knee or uppercut, something like that. Now, Dustin, me and my man Keys, we trying to give you keys to victory, dog. You need to be training specifically on wrestling and getting back to your feet. That's all your camp should be about, wrestling and getting back to your feet. And if you can find some heavyweights to wrestle you, that'll be even better, because Khabib is probably going to come into the fight bigger than you. So you need to start wrestling and grappling with guys bigger than you. That's what that'll be my game plan for his camp leading into this fight. We would do striking probably twice a week, but most of our camp would be on grappling and wrestling. And I don't really buy into those jiu-jitsu belts, because sometimes those guys get belts because they put in enough hours of training and been to a certain number of classes and stuff like that. So I really don't buy into those. My thing is, show me in the octagon that you know how to use jiu-jitsu. Don't just tell me you got a belt.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I know I know a guy who he runs a karate gym. He runs a karate classes, and he says that he, you know, doesn't. He was saying the other day how he doesn't allow his students to basically do that. He doesn't, you know, allow his students to just get a participation trophy, and you know how their parents, you know, will be asking when their child's going to be moving up to his next belt, you know, because he's been here for a while. And the guy was saying, look, like, it's not about the amount of time that you're here that just allows you to advance to the next belt. Like, you have to be ready for the next belt and show that you've obtained the skills to be worthy of the next belt. You need to get there up to that level skill-wise. I'm not just going to push you up the ladder because you've been here for a long time. I'm going to be honest with you about where I believe you're at skill-wise. And when he said that, I was like, wow, I really respect that, because you can't just be giving people a participation trophy.
Yeah, I like that too, because basically you're making them earn what they get. Because of my kids, my two youngest, you know, we put them in a karate class, and you know, I'm out there looking at them and practice and all that good stuff, and I'm like, really, they get another belt? They don't even look that good to me. So I was like, I really wasn't pleased with that. Basically, we put them in a class just so, you know, they would have an extracurricular activity to do after school, because both of them was in elementary school, so they really wasn't playing sports yet. And I was like, man, okay, so you gave them, you know, they got their green belt, they got their orange belt, and I'm sitting up here looking at them, and I'm looking at the kids that they getting the belts with, and I'm like, that kid looks like he would kick my son's ass, you know. So, you know, the participation thing is real. Me and you both know that. That's a, one of the things that's happening this day and age, that, you know, if a kid shows up and, you know, he gives his best effort, normally, you know, they'll get a certificate or a participation trophy or something like that. And I don't think that's good for the kid, because they really get a false sense of who they really are and what they really can do. So that's why I think you should be honest with kids. I think cutting kids from teams isn't a bad thing. Sometimes cutting a kid from a team means that they're going to work harder at that craft to come back better the next year. So, but you know, man, not to harp on that, but me and you, I personally don't see a way for Dustin to beat Khabib if he can't get to his feet. The only way I see him winning is he will have to clip Khabib and basically ground and pound him, and Khabib can't answer the shots and the ref stops it. But Khabib is shown to be a tough guy, man. So we'll see what happens. I wish that we could have some insight into Dustin's training camp so that we could see whether or not what he's actually concentrating on. And if Dustin is listening to our show, Dustin, 95% of your camp, grappling, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, and learning to get back to your feet.
Yeah, you know, we'll definitely want to get into that more on our next show. And you know, in the meantime, I would, like we've said here, I would expect that, you know, he's pretty much just drilling that in every practice, and every little piece of his camp, drilling that, getting back up to his feet, and practicing work from being on the bottom, practicing the defense, maybe even, you know, potentially even practicing offense from being on bottom. You know, fight
exactly.
Practice working from the bottom, offensively and defensively, and getting back to and finding the way to get back to your feet, expecting to be taken down. No, you can't. You
exactly.
Won't be able to avoid the takedown. This guy, you know, fought bears when he was, you know, a little kid. I watched a video of him the other day, and I'm like, how is this dude fighting a real bear, wrestling a real bear here? So you got to expect to be taken down and practice being on bottom with guys. And like Lee said, potentially even find the biggest guys you can. If you can, maybe even wrestle with some heavyweights or even light heavyweights, you know, guys, because I'm sure Khabib is a lot heavier, you know, walk-around weight, and he's going to come in heavier after he gains back the water weight. The guy's probably going to be like 170 pounds or maybe even more. You know, I don't believe for a second this dude is, you know, 155 pounds in real life. So he's probably like, you know, 185 or something like that in real life, because, you know, people be saying that he can, you know, he does fine wrestling heavyweights, but there's a reason. He's got more size to him than advertised. You know, this dude is bigger in real life. You know, he might even be pushing 190 in real life. So we'll see what happens. And that's why.
Keys, how you noticed that Khabib is always one of the earlier fighters to weigh in? And do you know what that means? That means they give him more time to rehydrate. So
that's a good point.
Yeah. He's normally one of the first five fighters to weigh in during the weigh-ins, because basically the earlier you can make weight, the earlier you can rehydrate. You can eat. You can do other. You know. You can start to get your strength back up from the weight cut. So, because remember, I think when he fought Connor was one of the last ones to weigh in because he was having a problem making weight. And Khabib was one of the first ones to weigh in because he made weight. So, I think Dustin needs to be one of the first ones to weigh in so he can rehydrate, get his strength back up to match what Khabib is going to do, because we know Khabib is going to rehydrate probably up to 15 pounds heavier than what he weigh in as. And that does make a difference.
Definitely. This has been an awesome conversation. It kind of come out of nowhere tonight. It really kind of just came out of left field tonight, but this was really good. I really liked this show. And, yeah, man, that was awesome. Everybody who supports us, thank you. And like I always say, stay positive and just appreciate what you have and love yourself. You know, that's pretty much all I got for tonight. Lee, you know, it's all yours. Take it away.
Actually, man, for people that listen to our show, you know, we're not a debate show. We're a conversation show. Me and my man Keys, we get up here. You know, we share our thoughts about UFC. We share our thoughts about a bevy of stuff from time to time, depending on what mood we're in. But, you know, we know our core base and our core fans. They like us talking to UFC. And tonight, that's what you got. You got two guys, fans of the sport, talking about the UFC. We had a good show tonight. Me and my man Keys, just for our fans, we had decided that Wednesday, with our scheduled premiere, would normally be the night that we'll basically be on. Our time probably vary, but we'll normally be between 8 and 8:30. So to our fans, lock us in for Wednesdays, between 8 and 8:30 Eastern, 6 and 6:30 Mountain Time. Me and my man Keys, you know, thank you for listening. Have a good evening. Everybody take care of themselves and take care of each other. Everybody have a great evening. Peace.